This is Jock Talk, an intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing. Presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who touched Derby, 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pravnik come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Baraj aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano.
A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now, here's Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. A big welcome to everyone joining us throughout North America on Sirius 220, XM 206. You can also join us online and listen to previous or live shows via our website, horseracingradio.net. I am retired jockey Christina McManigal. I am here in our Lexington, Kentucky studio. Mike Penna is not with us today. He is actually in Saratoga. I will be joining him soon, so be sure to listen over the next few weeks as we will be bringing you top coverage from Saratoga Springs, New York. But tonight, our guest is a familiar name, especially to those of you familiar with the Kentucky racing circuit. With 1,544 wins, over $35 million in earnings, this jockey set racing records from the very start of his career. I am proud to introduce to you all jockey John McKee. John, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
We appreciate you taking the time. I know this was kind of last minute for you to come here on the show, and we're really looking forward to spending the hour with you.
Well, great. Hopefully I can provide some great moments of talking here within the hour.
That sounds great. We were talking before the show, and John was a little bit worried about an hour-long interview, but I told him this time always flies by. And so, John, let's get started here. I know you've been riding since 2002. Is that correct?
Yes, ma'am.
And you were introduced to racing by your father, actually, who was a jockey.
Yes, that was correct.
And his name was David McKee. And tell us about your father and growing up in that kind of an environment where racing was such a centerfold.
Well, when I was a kid growing up, my father and I, we had a great bond. We still do. And when I was a kid, he was riding. I really don't remember that time, but when, as I got older, I saw the winning pictures of him, and that's what inspired me. When I was a kid, I saw the pictures, and I said, man, that's what I want to do. I want to experience it. I want to try it. I don't know how good I'll be at it, but this is what I want to pursue as, you know, when I get out of high school.
Sure.
And my mother and dad was like, they wanted me to like pursue other things. They wanted me to go to college. And I just kind of was firm with them. I said, no, this is what I want to do. And I think looking back at it now, my dad, he knew what was involved. He knew the dedication he had to put into it. He knew the responsibility. He knew how dangerous it could be. And, you know, as a kid, you're kind of fearless. You don't really think of things like that. And so I just kind of shoved him off, and we just kind of like, we got arguments about it. And so finally, when I graduated high school, I said, look, when I'm 18, you can't tell me what I can and can't do, blah, blah, blah. And so that's kind of where it led to. So when I turned 18, there's a farm probably about 15, 20 minutes up the road from where I grew up at in a town called Bethel. It was a little training center. And so I went there and applied for a job. I started mucking stalls, and I started from the ground up. And then when I kind of reached that plateau, I started walking horses, and then they put me on a Arabian horse to kind of just kind of get the feel on how to post and just kind of get the feel in the saddle, how to hold the reins a little bit. And when I got good at it, they put me on a thoroughbred, and I galloped it around the racetrack, and that's kind of how it all started. So, and then after a couple years went by, I thought I was ready for the racetrack. So I went to the track, formerly known as River Downs, and I was galloping horses, and I was getting on a lot of horses. I was getting on probably 14, 15 a day, and at that time, I thought I was rich. I said, I don't need to ride. And there was an agent that came along and said he wanted to take my book under one condition. He would start when he thought I was ready. And I said, that's great. No problem. And so he kind of got me into some outfits, working horses. And a year later, that agent was Eddie Campbell that took my book. And we started, and that's kind of where it all started, of how I started and how I got my agent. And from there on, I just kind of listened to Eddie, and he taught me a lot, and listened to the people that around me. Because in this business, you can always learn. You can learn something every day.
Absolutely. And what a good connection to make early on with Agent Eddie Campbell. And we'll talk about that a little bit later, John, but I want to ask you a question about that first experience on the Arabian. Was that the first horse you ever rode?
No, we had a couple horses at the house when I was growing up as a kid. So I knew a little bit about horses. Not much, cuz I didn't get on them every day. But I was around them just a little bit, not much, but just enough to know how not to get hurt.
Sure. And you were already athletic because I believe you were also a star wrestler in high school.
Well, I just, like I said, I was light. I just got lucky. I had good coaches around me that kind of put me in a position to kind of get better, and taught me a lot, and yeah, just got lucky in the sport of wrestling.
Sure. And because of your size, John, was it assumed by a lot of people that you would follow in your dad's footsteps?
I think a lot of people assume that, but that wasn't necessarily the intentions of my parents when I first started.
Sure. And looking back now, I guess you would understand their hesitation, I guess, in giving you their blessing as far as pursuing that kind of career?
Well, it's just that motherly and fatherly love that you get from your parents, that, you know, they want you to do good in life, but they don't want to see their kid get hurt or, you know, and I see that now.
Sure. Well, let's talk about when you first went to River Downs and when you met the agent, Eddie Campbell. Tell us about your meeting with him.
Well, you know, my parents they've taught me just manners. Yes, sir, no, ma'am. And I was just very respectful. I at that point, I was just learning, so I didn't know a whole lot. So he took me under his wing, and he basically put me in with the right horsemen, and them horsemen has taught me what I know now.
And that is so important early on in your career to be taught by the right people. And the agent, Eddie Campbell, he is known for getting someone else started. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah, that's correct. He got Steve Coffin started, and a lot of numerous other riders started.
So he was a very, very good agent to start out with there, John. Tell us about how long did it take before he went up to you and said, "You're ready. Let's get this going."
It was a year. It was a good year because, I was galloping horses like at summer at River Downs and galloping that turf way in the winter. So it was a good year.
And you rode
before, he thought I was ready.
And you rode your first race at Turfway Park in March of 2002. Yes.
Yes, yeah, that is correct. Trainer Mary Atkins put me on my first horse.
And how?
And I actually ran fourth in that race. It was under the lights. It was just a lot of good exposure. Just kind of was a good horse to learn on, just kind of breaking out of the gate, just kind of getting that racing feel underneath of me and getting it past me.
Sure, sure. Do you remember that experience? Do you remember if you were nervous? Do you remember?
I remember it like it was yesterday. I had all kinds of butterflies. I was nervous. I didn't know what to expect. You know, I didn't want to put anybody else in danger.
Sure.
So I put everything that I've learned from when I was galloping, from when I first started, I just took everything in, what I've learned, and kind of put it toward that race. And ever since, I've just kind of been building off of that.
Of course. And I remember my first race as well, John, how fast everything happened.
Yeah, it's a lot faster in the racing than it is in the morning.
Oh, absolutely. But as you continue to ride, it all slows down, and I'm sure you experienced that feeling where you know exactly where you are, and it was in May of that year that you had your first victory.
Yeah, it was what happened was I rode a few horses starting out, and I was in the horse stumbled, went down, and I ended up breaking my collarbone. So right off the bat, I was like in the hospital, injured, and I remember being in the hospital and my dad coming in, and the first words coming out of his mouth was, "I told you so, son," and that's what kind of got me. That's what kind of put that fight in me, put that energy back in me that I want to go out there and prove that, you know, that I'm better than this, you know, since I only rode like maybe 10 horses. And I remember when he said that to me, I was like, you know what, I want to go out there just to prove him. I wanted to prove him wrong, that I wasn't a quitter and, you know, I wasn't going to hang my tack up right away.
I completely understand that.
That I remember, yeah, in that May, we won our first race, and it just seemed like once we got that first win out of the way, it just seemed like everything just kind of snowballed, and just kind of things led to another, and horses were just running through the bridle, and I couldn't even tell you how or why, but they were running.
Got that monkey off your back, and that's very interesting to know that you broke your collarbone so early in your career. You got a taste of those injuries, and what, besides the fact that your father said that to you, did you experience any kind of hesitation getting back in the saddle, having not experienced those highs of the sport yet?
No, not really, because it wasn't like a spill where it happened down the backside or in the lane. This was just a horse that was, I think, was getting tired, galloping out after the wire, and stumbled, and I came off and just landed the wrong way. So I didn't think it was a bad accident. It was just kind of a bad circumstance that just happened.
Sure, sure. Well, again, you came back winning, and you went on at an incredible rate. You finished the 2002 meet at River Downs as the leading rider, and in the process, you won 114 races, breaking Steve Cawthon's 1976 record. Is that right?
Yeah, that is correct. And you know, I tell you this again, that it was just a lot of luck, a lot of hard work, just a combination of those two. The horsemen that just put their trust in me. And I was a bug boy. I was learning, continue to learn, humble. And I think a combination of all that led to all those victories.
Sure, sure. Did you look at your dad and say, well, you know, you told me so, but I proved you wrong?
No, I didn't say that, because at that point I was working every day. I didn't have time to think about it, because it seemed like I was working in the morning, racing in the afternoon, and I went home, I ate, and it seemed like I was in bed early. So those like 4 or 5 months that was just, it was just hard work and dedication, responsibility. And at the end of the day, I think my dad was proud.
Of course, of course. And you continued to break records. You went on to Turfway to ride 24 winners, and you earned the riding title, I believe, there as well?
Yes, that's correct.
And of course, at Churchill, you also broke Steve Cawthon's record that fall.
Yeah, and, you know, there's a lot of little things that lead up to that, because I was making the transition from Ohio to Kentucky, and once again, I was getting the opportunity. And without the opportunity, none of this would have even happened at all.
Sure, sure. Do you remember those early years in the jocks room, other than your agent, Eddie Campbell? Do you remember anyone who really took you under their wing and helped you out?
Well, I remember when I first started, the guy that I ride with today, Perry, he was very classy. Mike Maganella, he was another one when I first started. We watched films together. We'd go behind the gate and we'd talk. And I remember when I went to Kentucky, Pat Day kind of took me under the wing. We had dinner several times and we talked about the races and what to expect, what to stay away from, what to do to better myself. I just feel blessed and lucky that, you know, I've had a lot of great people, a lot of great riders to learn from, to look up to.
Sure. Tell us your opinion on why those older riders would take a younger rider under their wing, especially given your success you were having. Why they would take their competition and help them out?
Well, that I can't tell you. I just believe in just being humble, staying true to yourself, treating other people with respect, and I just think that surrounding yourself by good people, good things are going to happen.
Of course, of course. Did your dad? Did he warm up to the idea? Did he take you under his wing a bit as well and teach you what he had learned in his career?
Yeah, a little bit. He was the one that kind of showed me more or less of how to use the whip, how to twirl the whip, how to switch sticks, how to throw the reins at the horse, how to get the horse in the bit. Timing is everything in this game. If you know how fast you're going early, you're going to have some horse to finish with. And you just got to have a good sense of pace. And I think a gentleman that kind of created that was a gentleman by the name of Billy Conway. He's kind of put the clock in my head, and I give him a lot of credit for that.
What our listeners might not know, and what I found was one of the more difficult aspects of that kind of a career was that pace you're talking about, John, and how a jockey needs to know down to the second how fast they're moving on that horse.
Yeah, you do. You got to know how fast you're going. You got to know your horse. You got to know, some horses got an 8th-of-a-mile finish. Some horses you got to ride from the 3/8 pole home. So you just, it helps by being on them in the morning a little bit. Like I said, you got to have a clock in your head, know how fast you're going, how fast the horses in front of you are going, and then things are going to kind of, accumulate from there.
Sure, sure. And after that breakthrough start in Kentucky and Ohio, you then moved your tack to New York, where you won with your first mount at Aqueduct.
Yes, and there's another circumstance where Eddie Campbell and I, we formed a great relationship together, and he made several phone calls to New York to let the people know that I was coming. And I remember two key trainers was Rick Dutrow and Nick Zito. They had a lot of faith in me, used me a lot, and kind of got me going when I needed it.
How tough was that transition for you as far as moving away from your family, moving away from what you knew in Kentucky and Ohio?
Well, my parents knew that I was in good company because Eddie and I, we got an apartment together. We stayed in Rusty Arnold's condo in Garden City. So we was in a good place. I was with Eddie Campbell. He kind of had a pretty good rein on me as far as going out or people that I was associating myself with. And he was a father figure when my parents wasn't around.
It's very good to have good people around you there. And how was the Jocks Colony different in New York?
No different than anywhere else. I mean, you, like I said, there's a lot of classy people there. I was always taught you treat with people with respect, and they're going to give it back to you. And just always taught to be humble, and you always learn from other riders. Don't matter if you're in Ohio, Kentucky, New York, California. There's always a chance to learn. There's always people to meet, people to surround yourself by, good people. So you can always you learn different things from different people anywhere you go in this business.
Sure. And you won 4 stakes during your apprentice year, which is a relatively big deal considering that there are no weight allowances for apprentices in stakes races. How was that feeling to get chosen to ride those horses initially and then to win?
Well, first of all, it was an honor and a privilege just to get that opportunity because there was other riders in the jocks room that had experience, had many years of riding. So looking back, yeah, definitely a privilege and honor. I was blessed to have that opportunity. And to be able to land myself in the winner's circle for the trainers and owners was an honor in itself.
So I know, John, that when I did my research for this show, many, many articles that would come up would compare your career to that career of Steve Cawthon's, given that you were breaking his records left and right, and your agent, Eddie Campbell, also brought Steve Cawthon up. How was that for you to, so early on in your career, always have that comparison? People would always compare you to Steve Cawthon.
You know, I didn't really let it get to me mentally, because my goal was to go out and do the best for my trainers and owners that I was riding for. I wasn't really worried about breaking records or goals, or I was just worried about, you know, winning and keeping my head on straight and learning and just kind of growing as a person because I was so young.
Sure. And John, I want to ask you, given my experiences regarding this, how tough was the weight for you? I know you're naturally light, but when you're an apprentice, you have to be even lighter. So how was that for you? Was that difficult? Did you work out a lot? How was that part of the sport?
Well, I think that's kind of where the wrestling thing kind of helped out a lot, you know, because when I came in, I was in shape. I was fit. I was ready to go. So I think, you know, being young and being athletic and being in sports, that kind of helped me when I first got in the business. But it actually helped me because when you're apprentice, you get a weight allowance. So I didn't, you know, the weight has never been an issue in my career. I've been blessed in that area.
Of course. And when you're naturally light, you are going to be stronger out there dueling down to the wire versus a jockey who's been sitting in the hot box for 3 hours straight.
And I feel strong. Like I said, I can go and I can eat healthy. I can eat anything I want. I don't have to worry about pulling weight. And I just think that's just been an attribute to my career, just being light.
Of course.
And having a lot of energy.
That too. And when you lost the bug, you were an Eclipse Award finalist for Outstanding Apprentice. And that had to be an honor and an experience in and of itself.
Yeah, that was a really cool experience. Even though I didn't win it, it was great just to be nominated. And I remember flying out to Del Mar and taking it all in and seeing the great owners and the greatest trainers and the greatest jockeys and everybody that's a part of the business. I thought that was the coolest thing ever, just to be surrounded by all those people in one room at that one time. I thought that was great.
And you should feel that way, the coolest thing ever, because that is such an honor. That is such an honor. And did you look back, did you sit back and just look and think, wow, I got here? Was that such a gratifying feeling, I'm sure?
It was a humbling feeling, just because of all the hard work and all the dedication and all the hours that you spend and getting on horses in the morning and being in the jocks room in the afternoon. It was very gratifying. It was rewarding.
And
you know, all those hours that I put in, it was paying off.
Of course. And when you lost that bug, I know that many people are really going to be watching you and to see how successful you'll be without that weight allowance. Did you feel the pressure from that when you lost the bug?
I didn't feel any pressure at all. I was just my main goal was winning, just trying to ride a smart race, making the owners proud, making the trainers proud, that, you know, because we're only on them horses for a couple minutes, where them trainers and owners, they invest a lot of money, a lot of their time. They, you know, and they put in weeks and months of training into this one horse, and we're on that horse for 2 minutes. So that didn't even, the pressure didn't get to me. I was just worried about winning and doing my owners and trainers proud.
It's great to hear you say that, John, because having done several of these interviews and having interviewed jockeys who started from the ground up, you have that appreciation of what it takes to get a horse to the races. It's a lot of work they put in.
It's a lot of work and a lot of time.
Absolutely.
And a lot of money.
A lot of money, too. But after you lost the bug, you still went on to win 212 races in 2003 and 210 races in 2004. We'll continue to talk about that after this short commercial break. Stay with us. You're listening to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judge's choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Hey, I'm Chantel Sutherland Cruz, and want to tell you all about BetAmerica.com. It's the coolest place to bet on horse racing on over 200 racetracks from America and around the world. New players receive a 100% bonus on your first deposit, up to $300. That's the best sign-up bonus available today. It's time to play the BetAmerica way.
Since 2006, the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund has provided critical financial assistance to some 60 riders who have sustained catastrophic on-track injuries. The lives of these former athletes who have given so much to the sport of horse racing have been changed forever. I'm Mike Penna, president of the Horse Racing Radio Network and proud supporter of the PDJF, and I ask you to join me in supporting this outstanding organization right now by texting the word JOCKEY to 50555. You'll be credited with a $10 donation that can literally change the lives of those disabled riders who need it so much. It's quick, it's easy, and it's only $10. Who would think a simple $5 Xacta box would mean so much to so many? So let's all help make a huge difference in the lives of those riders who have given us so many great memories. Text the word JOCKEY to 50555 today and visit pdjf.org to learn more. Message and data rates may apply. Terms mgive.org/chi.
If you missed the Equine Forum, you missed a lot.
Wise Dan, two-time Horse of the Year, two-time Breeders' Cup Mile victor, recently announced that he is cleared to resume training for trainer Charlie Lopresti, and he joins us now on the Equine Forum. Let's just lay out the scenario. If he makes it to the races and the Breeders' Cup Mile is here at Keeneland this year, one of his favorite courses, how many starts will he need before the Breeders' Cup for you to feel comfortable?
I mean, in a perfect world, we'd love to run him in the four-star Dave, run him at Woodbine, run him in the Shadwell, and then Breeders' Cup. But for him, if we could get him ready here all summer and not have to make a start in the summer and run him once in the Woodbine race, Shadwell, and Breeders' Cup, two races before the Breeders' Cup.
The Equine Forum, giving you the inside track on thoroughbred racing. Saturday mornings, 8 to 10 a.m. on Sirius XM Channel 92 and always streaming live at horseracingradio.net.
Hi, this is Corey Johnson with the weekly Jockey Talk 360 update. As we all know, the racing has shifted to Saratoga and Del Mar, and we saw some Hall of Fame riding performances last week. The Jockey of the Week was awarded to Johnny Velasquez. At Saratoga last week, Johnny had 7 wins, including a perfectly timed ride aboard Hard Not to Like in the Grade 1 Diana Stakes. For the week, Johnny won 3 graded stakes, and his mounts earned $809,000. He's one of the best veteran riders there is in the world, and he showed it last week. Now let's skip over to the West Coast, where Del Mar is in full swing, and we got to see another Hall of Fame performance in the San Diego Handicap as Gary Stevens rode Catch a Flight to a head victory. Prior to the race, Gary talked about his last effort aboard Catch a Flight in the Gold Cup, and he thought that he had moved a little bit too soon. So in the mile and a 16th San Diego Handicap, he had to be very careful, and he was steady as a top, and he went all the way through the stretch, past the winner, and got up to win by a head. Another jockey who's had a really good start to the Del Mar meet is Flavian Pratt. Flavian had 2 stakes winners last week, bringing his total for the meet at 3 stakes wins. Just an excellent start for Flavian Pratt. He's really showing the horsemen out there that he can handle top-notch horses in the graded stakes races. There's also another opportunity for horse players, and that's at jockeydraft.com. They have a new game. They have a Del Mar-only game, where basically you go online and you sign up, and then you pay $20, and then you have a chance to win as much as $120 or $50 per second, and the winner also gets an autographed limited edition photo of Zenyatta. And here's how it works. You go on, you make your stable pick of 6 different jockeys. They all have different salaries, and there's a $75,000 salary cap. So the horse player who picks the most successful jockeys for the day at Del Mar wins the contest. So once again, you can go to jockeydraft.com and get more information. And also, the people at jockeydraft.com have donated part of all proceeds to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. And by the way, the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund is having their annual fundraiser August 1st, this Saturday, at racetracks across the country. So look for different charity opportunities throughout racing. This is Corey Johnson reporting for the Jockey Talk 360 update.
This is Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. I am Christina McManigal here, joined tonight by jockey John McKee. We were just getting involved with our interview. It seems like time flies here. John, welcome back.
Happy to be back.
All righty. Well, we were just finishing up with your breakthrough apprentice year when we left for the commercial break. And after you left New York, tell us about where you went, what your plans were, your goals at that point in your career.
Well, I ultimately left that up to Eddie Campbell, and he ultimately decided to come back to Kentucky to get back on the Kentucky circuit after I lost my bug when I was in New York.
So you stayed in Kentucky, and you continued to find great success. In 2004, you hooked up with trainer Bob Holthus at Oaklawn and Churchill, and you did very well together.
We did. It was one of those things where Eddie Campbell, I think, has made that connection and has been talking to Bob way before I even thought about it, because I never questioned what Eddie did. I left it up to whatever he wanted to do. We did it. I just listened, yes, sir, no, sir. And that's where we landed after the Churchill meet. We went to Oaklawn to ride for Bob.
How was the Oaklawn meet? How did you like the racetrack there?
It was good. I had a lot of great times. I love the town. I love the community. It's just a racing town. Had a lot of success there. Met a lot of great people, a lot of great horsemen that gave me a lot of great opportunities.
And you had 3 graded stakes wins along that time with Greater Good, Level Playing Field, and Pro Prado, who in fact was your first Derby mount.
Yes. I remember I was riding Pro Prado, and it was an unfortunate situation. We had to run into Smarty Jones. But that horse had a lot of great heart. He tried every time he showed up. And getting to be able to ride in my first Derby, that's something that I'll cherish the rest of my life. I'll never forget it. Humble to be a part of it, because looking back now, it's tough just to even get to even ride in that race. There's only 20 horses, 20 riders. And I was just appreciative of the opportunity, the friendship of Bob Holthus, that, you know, when I'm older, I can tell my grandkids, you know, that I got to ride the Kentucky Derby.
What an experience that had to be, to walk out on the track for the first time to hear the playing of My Old Kentucky Home. How was that? Just, that had to give you chills.
It did. I tell you, your people tell you all the time, just wait till that song comes on. I don't know what it is, but when you go through that tunnel and they start playing that song, it's like you get goosebumps. And I remember that feeling like it was yesterday. That it's just, it's a rush. It's something that you can't describe in words. It's a feeling that you experience that's forever grateful.
And tell us about the race itself. To be out there with 20 other horses and something not very many jockeys experienced before, how was that? The pressure that maybe was put on you by the trainer and just the maneuvering and putting yourself in good position in that large field?
Well, as far as pressure, there was no pressure from Bob Holthus. I felt like when I rode for him, there was total confidence in me, and I had total confidence in him. So as far as pressure, there was no pressure. The ultimate goal was to win the race, and there were some really nice horses in there, and Smarty Jones was a tremendous horse. And we caught it was a muddy track that day, and he ran hard. I think he ran 11th or 12th, and he put in a good effort. It just wasn't good enough.
Well, going against the likes of Smarty Jones, great, great racehorse there. But your connection there with Bob Holthus and the success you two found together, you happened upon a horse by the name of Lawyer Ron.
Yes, Lawyer Ron. I rode him, and that happened so fast. I remember riding him in a maiden race at Louisiana Downs, I believe, and he went impressively, and he just went on to, he got right at the right time, and he was an unbelievable horse.
What was he like to ride? What were his quirks and his running style?
Well, his running style, he was real speedy. But if you ever got him off the bit early, he was a great horse. You reach down and ask for him, and he would give it to you. You would think you would be out of horse, and he had another gear or two left. And when I was on him, I was on a high. You know, I felt like I was on a mountain. And we had some special races that we won together, and that in itself, that's something that I'll never forget. He was a classy horse, did everything right, did everything on cue, and his record speaks for itself.
Of course it does. You two teamed up together to win the Grade 3 Risen Star Stakes, the Grade 2 Rebel Stakes, the Grade 2 Arkansas Derby, and you eventually found yourself back in the Kentucky Derby that year.
Yeah, and the Derby is just so hard to win because there's so many great horses. I believe if you're in the race, you got a shot. It doesn't matter if it's the odds are in the favor of you or they're not in the favor. You can't look at the odds in that race because there's 20 great horses, and they're in that race for a reason, because they belong. And it was just an unfortunate situation that ran into another great horse, Barbaro.
Some tough competition.
So, you look back and you think, if several of those horses went in there, you definitely had a big shot. But going into the race, I thought I had a shot to win. I was very confident. And like I said, Barbaro was just he was a powerful horse that day, and he ran off and left the whole field. So
you've had 3 Kentucky Derby mounts, but you have never had a Breeders' Cup mount, John. Is that one of your goals for the future?
It is a goal. I think as any rider, it's a goal. If you don't have goals or any ambition, then, man, you're in the wrong business. You wake up every day and getting on horses in the morning thinking you're going to find that next 2-year-old or next 3-year-old. And they change so much. They develop. Some horses develop later, and some horses get better at the right time. So you just don't know what you got. You just got to keep fighting. You got to keep riding hard, and hopefully that'll come along.
A lot of luck involved in this sport. But on March of 2008, you were lucky with your 1,000th race on a horse by the name of Bid Made, and you won by 5 1/4 lengths at Turfway Park. How was that experience to reach that huge milestone?
That was a great milestone. It was for a good friend of mine, Billy Conley. I'll never forget it. That's kind of when I never really worried about the races I was winning. I was just, my main focus was winning. So when I reached that 1,000-mile, the 1,000-win mark, that's kind of when it sat in, like, man, that's a great accomplishment. Now I want to get to 2,000. So once that goal was reached, there was another goal to reach higher for.
Well, you are well on your way to that next milestone. But in 2012, I believe you had a very interesting and exciting weekend. You had your first child with your wife, Shelly. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
And the next day, I read this article. It was very, very interesting. The next day, you had a spill at Keeneland.
I did. I had it was just a freak accident. Horse took a bad step, went down. I went down with it. Luckily, there was no broken bones. But I remember I remember being in the hospital bed next to my wife with our child. So yeah, I'll never forget that day.
Oh, wow, really brings the just how dangerous that sport is. And tell us about your wife Shelly and how you two met.
Well, I was actually in Arkansas, and we met at a restaurant, and we talked, and she was from Arkansas, and I was headed back to Kentucky, and we kept a great relationship. And I think the following year after that, she came to Kentucky to be with me, and we've been together for 11 years since then.
That's fantastic. And your son, Max, would be 3 now, is that right?
He'll be 3 in October.
And does he show any kind of fascination with the racetrack?
He's young, so we've had him around the horses. he likes the horses, but I don't think he knows what to think of the horses. He always tells me they're big.
As they are.
Only time will tell as he gets older.
Sure. Now, what would you say to him if he were to come up to you like you did to your dad and say, "Hey, Dad, I want to be a jockey"?
Well, I can see, like, the fear of the parent. You don't want your kid to get hurt. But at the same time, I want my kid to experience life. I want him to do whatever he wants in life. And I want to encourage that. I don't want to take that away from him. If he wants to be a pilot, you know, I want to be that dad that encourages my son to do whatever he wants in life and to be the best he can at whatever he does.
That's fantastic. And we're here with jockey John McKee joining me on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. John, tell us about your current life, your current career. You're riding at Belterra, is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Now, what do you do to prepare for a race? You have a very busy schedule, I'm sure, working horses in the morning, and then you go to the room to prepare for the races. And what do you do? Do you handicap the races? Do you watch a lot of replays? What's your preparation method?
Well, there's, like I said, first of all, you get a form and you find out what horses you're riding, what horses get in that day. And then if there's a horse that you're unfamiliar with, you can go to Twin Spires and pull up the horse. And if you don't know the horse, you can watch the replay on how he runs or what's the best way to find out anything about your horse. But as far as preparation, you just got to know the horses that are in the race and who's around you and you know, who's got speed and who not, and just got to figure out where you're going to be at in that race.
Do you have a preference as far as those horses that have early speed or those horses that close with a rush? Do you have any kind of preference as far as a horse's running style?
Not really. I'm a passenger. You know, my job is just trying to stay out of the horse's way, let him find a good stride down the backside and allow him to stay out of trouble in the race and allow him to finish willingly. And that way you're running at the end of the stretch.
If someone were to come up to you today and ask you what it takes to become a rider, what would you tell him? What would you say are the most important qualities that makes a person a great jockey?
Well, I think time. You got to put a lot of time in. You got to be out there in the morning getting on horses. You got to develop a relationship with the people that you're riding for. You got to have a clock in your head, know how fast you're going. And then at the same time, you just got to ride a good race and put yourself in a position where you can win races, or put your horse in a position where they can give their best effort going forward.
And what would you tell them is the hardest part of your profession?
The hardest part is trying to land the fast horses, convincing that trainer that you want to ride for them, they got to trust you and you got to trust them. And it's just a lot of hard work, and you got to be able to put that work in, got to be dedicated to the sport.
I remember when I first got into it, John, how little I knew about the politics and the selling yourself as the best jockey for the job. Did you find that hard to adjust to at first, that almost salesman type of attitude?
Actually, it didn't really work that way, because I got involved with Eddie Campbell, and he lined everything up, and he had all my workers lined up that morning. That he had specific times that I had to be at different barns, and you just had to be there on time and work your horses and just you know, basically just putting your time in.
Sure, sure. And Agent Eddie Campbell, are you two still working together, or
no,
tell us?
No, he ended up passing away, and so I'm working with a guy, Jeff Perrin. He's handling all my engagements, and if there's a worker in the morning, he'll call me, or there's a, you know, if I have to be go to a farm or somewhere and to breeze a horse, then I will. And he does a lot of legwork too. He calls the trainers and tries to pick out the right spots for the horses, and so we're a good team together, you know.
I'm so sorry to hear that about Eddie Campbell, who was such a big influence in your life. But,
yes.
John, where do you see yourself in 5 years?
Well, in 5 years, you know, hopefully I can get back on the Kentucky circuit. And my main goal is, like you said, that, you know, I want to win races. And, you want to try to get those Breeders' Cup mounts and Derby mounts. Them are the whole goals. How to get there is a challenge sometimes.
Sure.
Because you got to surround yourself by good people and a good horseman, and good horsemen win, you know, they win good races.
Of course, of course. And take me.
So that's my goal here in the 5 years, of, you know, get back to maybe get back to the Kentucky circuit and maybe have a chance of maybe finding a Breeders' Cup mount.
Well, there we go. Breeders' Cup is coming to Keeneland. Not too far away from you right now.
No, it's an hour away, and Keeneland is a beautiful place to race.
Well, there we go. Is that your favorite track?
Yeah, Keeneland and Delmar are probably two of the most beautiful track, I think, in the country. I had a lot of good memories at Churchill Downs, and I've had a lot of great memories at Oaklawn Park. So, I mean, all in all, Keeneland is a beautiful place to race. Del Mar in California is a beautiful place. There's a lot of good spots to race.
And, of course, the career of a jockey is one spent many times on the road. Do you like that part of your job, traveling? Does it get tiresome? What do you feel about that?
It's really not a job if you love what you do. You got to travel to different places, to different horses, you know, because you got Ellis, you got Volterra, you got Churchill, you got Keeneland, you got Indiana Downs, and they're within two hours of each other. And so in order to find a fast horse, you're going to have to travel to keep that horse.
Put a lot of miles on the car, I'm sure.
But it's all worth it when you get in the winner's circle. There's a lot of work and a lot of miles you put on your vehicle, a lot of time you put in the jock's room. But there's no other reward that's priceless when you win a race.
That's exactly right. And John, so take me, with all that traveling and all the preparation and hard work that goes in, take me through a typical day in your life.
On a work day or an off day?
Well, both.
Well, like today, like on an off day, there's several jockeys that like to play golf, so that's a hobby of mine. I like to play golf, and there's Brian Hernandez and Corey Landry. I know he left to go to Saratoga, and there's Robbie Alvarado, and there's about four or five of us, Chris Landeros. We all like to play golf, and then other than that, I like spending time with my kid, my wife, and other than that, I'm a pretty simple guy.
Who would you say is the best golfer out of that group?
Oh, gosh, man. I would say probably Robbie Alvarado's probably got an edge. Corey Lanner's not too far behind. But it's all good fun. It's all good group of people that like to play, and we all get along with each other, and it's a hobby that we all enjoy, and it's good to kind of separate that competitiveness and just kind of enjoy each other's company when we're out there.
Of course, of course. And take me through the day of a busy day full of riding.
quite a busy day of riding. Like I said, you have to get up early in the morning, get out there. Track opens at 6:30. You'll work horses till nine or ten or whenever the time sets. And then after that, get something to eat. Might take a nap. Just kind of get loosened up for the races. And then when the races start, you kind of get your mind on your task at what you're doing.
Of course. And I hear that you also like to ski. Is that true?
I love to ski. My wife and sons, we go to Colorado once a year. We like to go to Keystone. And there's like five different ski resorts out there. There's Ossie Basin and Beaver Creek and Breckenridge. So that's something I love to do. I wish there was, you can't do it full, all year round. They got a ski resort here in Northern Kentucky. It's, or Indiana, Paoli. And then there's Perfect North in Florence, Kentucky, or somewhere around there. And, like I said, I tell everybody, if you can learn to ski at them two places, you can go anywhere in the country and ski.
I've been to Paoli, actually, and funny that when I was riding, my agent forbid me from skiing because he was afraid of what I would do.
it's just a rush I get from skiing, and, at first I was intimidated, but it's, the several years I've been doing it, I've got a lot of confidence, and I can ski backwards, and you just learn and grow, and you can ski over the jumps, and I think it's cool. It gives me a rush, and like I said, we get away for once a year, and that's good enough for me.
Wow, ski backwards! I think I could learn a thing or two from you.
yeah, that's pretty cool. I really enjoy skiing.
Well, I also...
But I don't like to have the cold weather, and like I said, once you're skiing, you think it's cold, but it's not. You're working a lot of... you actually break a sweat.
Well, and I'm sure it's the same way when you're riding at Cold Turfway Park. It's maybe the coldest place I've ever been, but how do you prepare for that cold weather? It's that wind will hit you. It's brutal, but I'm sure once you start riding, it warms you up.
Well, the cold is cold. Being raised in Ohio, I've always been used to it as a kid. So when I came to Turfway and rode in the wintertime, it never did bother me because I was used to it as a kid. It gets cold, and you expect it, So as far as that, I'm used to the cold weather, and it's never bothered me.
Yeah, I don't like it too much. How do you prepare for a race differently when it's freezing outside?
Well, they got a synthetic track at Turfway. They used to have dirt. Now in the wintertime in the dirt, it did hurt. It kind of lost your concentration when all those clods came back and hit you in the knee or in the face. But as far as they got the new track surface at Turfway, they don't hurt as much. So you just kind of take it with a grain of salt and just kind of know your horse. Some horses like that. They don't like that kickback. So sometimes you got to kind of angle your horse out and get away from the kickback. And as far as that, you just got to kind of know what your horse likes and what he doesn't like in the race. Can't really prepare for it.
Sure. Well, John, we are almost out of time here, which is amazing because time flies. We've had a blast here on the show. I know I had a great time, and I hope everyone listening enjoyed this as much as I did. Thank you so much for joining us tonight, John.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me. I had a blast. Thanks.
Well, we will still see a lot from jockey John McKee, and we wish you all the best in your future endeavors. Thank you so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure talking with John McKee tonight. If you missed any portion of tonight's show, you can check out the podcast on our website, horseracingradio.net, and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. Be sure to join me next Tuesday at 6 o'clock Eastern Time with another edition of Jock Talk presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. For our producer, Lee Delapina, I am Christina McManigal. Thank you for listening.